The flight of Apollo 10.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
If the truth were known, we really delayed this launch so we could get the burritos on time.
I figured that.
The flight director says get back in.
We lost the flight plan out the window.
On all three networks, you replaced all the kitty cartoons.
Houston, we've had a problem.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
I was rolling on the moon one day.
Counter, go and throttle up.
Counter, go and throttle up.
The Earth from here is a grand oasis of the big vastness of space.
You're listening to The Space Program, NASA's past, present, and future.
The flight of Apollo 10. This is Nate Kinshi reporting. On 18 May 1969, at 49 minutes past noon, the launch team sent Apollo 10 on its way to America's second manned rendezvous with the moon.
40 seconds and counting, Tom Stafford making a final check of his computer. The vehicle, all stages pressurized at this time. We're waiting for the swing arms to come back. One should be coming back at this time, the second one at 17 seconds. Tom Stafford reports they are go. They're coming up the 20-second mark. T-minus 20 seconds and counting. 17 seconds and counting, guidance internal, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. Engines on, 5, 4, 3, 2, all engines running. Launch commit. Liftoff. We have liftoff 49 minutes past the hour. Stafford reports the clock has started. The tower is clear.
Okay, pitch is tracking, looking good. Roll complete, ELS manual. Roger, roll.
One Bravo is an abort mode dealing with altitude, function of altitude.
Come around a little bit in here. Right.
Plus 55 seconds.
Cabin is relieving.
Cabin pressure is relieving. Downrange 1 mile, 3.3 nautical miles high.
What a ride, Dave. What a ride.
Right. That's Gene Cernan reporting what a ride.
And Roger, go through next two.
Roger. Gene, you're through the next two. You're looking good.
2.25 G's. She's looking good.
The crew of Tom Stafford, Gene Cernan, and John Young felt the Saturn V first stage suddenly slam forward and backward until the cabin dials blurred before their eyes. Stafford tried to tell the mission control team when the first stage of the vehicle dropped off, but he could not squeeze the words out. When the remainder of the stack steadied, the S2 second stage, already firing, had the same pogo tendencies. The three astronauts had begun to wonder if the vehicle would hold together, especially the lunar module below them, when the S-4B third stage fired, rumbling and vibrating as it shot into Earth's orbit. During the system's review period, the ride smooth.
1 minute, 44 seconds, downrange 7 miles, 12 miles high.
You're go for staging, Ken.
Charlie, you sure didn't lose Snoopy on that staging?
Nah, I think Snoopy's still there with you. You're looking good. We got your Gemma motors on and your trim looks good.
That's your staging. I'm just beautiful.
Flight Director Glenn Lunny checked the men at the monitors in the mission control room, and they all voted to fire for translunar injection. Stafford's crewmen considered not wearing their helmets and gloves, but chickened out, as Young phased it, and put them on. They probably found the extra garb comforting when the S-4B fired, because the third stage again groaned and shook. None of the three were confident of being able to continue the trip much longer, and Cernan wondered how the mission could be safely aborted at this point in space. The guidance system kept Apollo 10 on a steady course, however, and they were on their way. When Young pulled the command module, Charlie Brown, away from the S-4B, the crew saw the panels that had housed the lunar module, Snoopy, drift away. After the command module was flipped around, it was about three times farther than intended, but it would take only a little extra gas to get back for docking. As the CM moved around, the mission controllers on the ground watched the maneuvers in living color. Television had worked so well on other Apollo flights that NASA had decided to put a color system on the command module.
Okay, babe, there's high gain. The TV is on. I should be coming down to you, and I'll have to adjust it as we come along into the S-4B.
Hey, it's beautiful, Gene. We got the black and white now. We're a little time to lay on the color.
Got it closed down all the way. Is that help any?
In the center of the limb now, we still got a real couple of bright spots, but it's looking good in the color. We can see the probe. It's really looking good. It's the silver panels that are reflected. You can't believe the picture we're getting. The resolution is really fantastic.
Purdue.
Yes. Hey, I don't know what you did, but it's a really beautiful now. Really great.
We're just a little closer.
Yeah.
Hey, the color is great, Gene.
How's that for the front porch?
Oh, boy, that's beautiful.
Apparently, we can't be more than about 5-10 feet away.
Roger. Looking real stable to us. We show you close and filing.
Doctor, in a second, I hope.
Roger.
Snap, and we're there. Got two grays.
Roger.
You saw the docket, Charlie. Didn't get any master alarm. Everything looks snug.
Roger.
Okay, Houston, we can see the 4B now.
Roger. Out of which window, Tom?
I'm John's looking at it out the hatch window.
Roger.
Now flight controllers watched along with the crew as Charlie Brown, perfectly aligned with his target, pulled up to Snoopy, latched onto him, and drew him out of his doghouse. Shortly thereafter, the signals to Houston through the big antenna dish at Goldstone, California, a vast populace saw a color view of a large portion of their western hemisphere.
This is just so that you guys don't get too excited about the TV and forget what your job is down there.
We're ready for what we're about to receive.
The moon, let me play among the stars. Let me see what the rain is like on a Jupiter and Mars.
Just want to send some thoughts back to you.
Roger, thank you for your thoughts. And with this view of the Earth, looks like the United States, the landmass of the U.S. is showing up better now than it was a few minutes ago.
Right, Bruce, you can really see them. Looks like the New England states are kind of clobbered in there.
Right.
But the main part of it's coming in real good. Again, you can see the Great American Desert, the Rocky Mountains of the Sierra Nevadas there.
You're listening to The Space Program.
After checking tunnels, latches, and docking probes, the crewmen had a light workload as they coasted toward the moon. They were grateful for each small job, as firing the thruster to make slight corrections in spacecraft attitude. But this was so seldom necessary, they began to wonder if the jets were working. On occasion, however, when nothing was firing, the whole stack shimmied. They later speculated that this may have been caused by fuel sloshing. When making optical navigational sightings, the crew had trouble acquiring enough stars for an accurate reading. Without the optics, the men could see no stars at all for a long time. Finally, Stafford spotted a few dim orbs, but not much navigating was needed. Stafford, Cernan, and Young were the first Apollo pilots to be free from illness during the mission. Although Cernan experienced a slight vestibular disturbance, like all their colleagues who had flown before, once they unbuckled from the couches, they had a stuffy feeling in their heads. This lasted for 8 to 10 hours for Stafford and Young. Cernan gradually lost the sensation over the next 2 days. One major complaint the astronauts registered was about their water supply. They were supposed to chlorinate it at night. Because of an error in procedures radioed by Mission Control, Stafford had a double dose of chlorine when he took a drink during the first breakfast of the trip. This was unpleasant, but it posed no major problem. Something else in the water supply did. When earlier crews had complained about gas in the water system, a new water bag was designed, with a handle the crew could use to whirl the bag around to separate the gas from the water. It did not work. The gas settled to the bottom of the bag and then remixed with the water when the crew members tried to drink. The gas worried them. They could envision getting diarrhea, which would have been difficult to cope with during flight. They did have gas pains and cramps, but fortunately, nothing more. Poor water quality may have affected their appetites, for the astronauts on this flight were not big eaters. On occasion, they skipped meals. Stafford estimated they had enough food to last for 30 days. Not all the blame could be laid on the water, however. The food was still not that tasty. Back on Earth in early May, Donald D. Arabian, chief of the Apollo Test Division, had tried a 4-day supply of their rations. Arabian claimed to be somewhat of a human garbage can, but even he lost the desire for food on this diet. The sausage patties, for example, tasted like granulated rubber and left an unpleasant taste, with all the difficulties of preparation. Arabian added by the third day, continuing the test was a chore. He did like the items that were closest to normal table foods. Stafford's crew also found some newer dishes that could be eaten with a spoon, quite palatable. But the men dreaded reconstituting the dehydrated meals, knowing that the water contained so much gas. Unlike Apollo 8 crew, which could not see the moon with the unaided eye until the spacecraft was almost upon it, Stafford's group spotted it on the second day of flight. On the Earth, it looked like a waxing crescent, but Stafford and Young, with the help of Earthshine, could see almost a full moon. Landmarks on the lunar surface could not be picked out. Cernan also asked flight controllers if they thought he could really recognize the S-4B stage, because this was what he thought he was seeing. When Apollo 10 reached the lunar vicinity on May 21st, the controllers informed the crewmen that at one time or another, more than a billion persons had watched their televised activities. But interest now focused on the exact moment when the craft would shoot around the moon and lose communications with the Earth.
Apollo 10, Houston, 2 minutes to LOS. Everybody here says Godspeed.
Okay, and we'll see him right on the other side in orbit.
Roger, 76-22-55.
At 74 hours, 45 minutes into the mission, flight control predicted that loss of signal would come at 75 hours, 48 minutes, 24 seconds. The controllers had already determined that the ship would reach the moon 11 minutes later than scheduled, since there had been only one mid-course correction rather than two. The crew was impressed by the lunar landscape, although Stafford insisted it looked like a big plaster of Paris cast. The 6-minute retrograde firing seemed minute, but the engine kept firing and their confidence in it kept growing. When the engine finally shut down and they were sure that it had done its job, Stafford and Cernan had time to look at the lunar surface. They likened one area to a volcanic site in Arizona. Stafford then radioed.
We are getting data. We don't have any voice communication yet.
Roger, Houston, Apollo 10, you can tell the world that we have arrived.
Roger, 10, it's good to hear from you.
I couldn't believe this thing. The guidance was absolutely fantastic, and we'll give you the burns right now.
This engine is just beautiful.
Early, my hat's off to the guys in the trench. I love them.
Yeah, just that man that runs MSFN. I don't know that I can do that, though, but I'll say thank you.
Okay, Charlie, ready to copy your burns?
Go ahead.
Yeah, say thank you big.
Stafford, Young, and Cernan were fascinated by how much more slowly they had seemed to travel around the moon than they had around the Earth. They liked the slower pace, because on the first orbit they would pass directly over the area where Apollo 11 was due to land 2 months later.
How's the view, 10?
We have our astute geologists here overlooking the surface, and they'll report a minute.
Roger, standing by. Over.
Okay, we're just passing from the highlands over into the Maury area, and you can pass on to Jack. We caught a couple of real pretty little volcanoes, there's no doubt about them, and we got a couple of good high-resolution photos, and it still looks kind of brownish gray to us here. Over.
Roger, we copy.
Yeah, there was place back there where this was at. There was one volcano, or whatever it was, that it was all white on the outside, but definitely black around the top of it.
Roger.
Charlie, it might sound corny, but the view is really out of this world.
Roger. We had a couple of comments in the back row that I won't repeat.
6 hours before reaching the moon, Cernan and Stafford began getting the lander ready. Just before Apollo 10 rounded the corner to the back of the moon, flight control passed the good news to Stafford.
Okay, Charlie Brown and Snoop, 3 minutes going over the hill. You're go for undocking, and we'll see you around the other side.
Roger.
Roger.
The two crewmen and Snoopy heard a pow as they broke free. Young, all alone in what now seemed to be an unusually large command module, turned on the television camera so the flight controllers back on Earth could help him inspect the lander. Meanwhile, the lunar module landing gear had deployed and was in place. The lander's system checked out well, telling Young not to get too lonesome and not to go off and leave them. Stafford and Cernan announced that they were ready to go down and snoop around the moon. Young had used his service module thruster to pull Charlie Brown away from the lunar module for inspection. At nearly 100 hours into the mission, Stafford started the descent engine at minimum thrust. They appeared to be traveling exactly over the track they wanted. Their landing radar worked perfectly when they tested it.
Oh, Houston, Houston, this is Snoopy.
Right, Snoop. I hear you weaving your way up the freeway. Can you give me a post-burn report, over?
Yeah, as soon as I get my breath.
Young caught sight of the lunar module. Stafford had the vehicle in the right attitude 10 minutes earlier. Cernan asked, "You ready?" Then suddenly, Snoopy seemed to be throwing a fit, lurching wildly about. Stafford yelled that they were in gimbal lock, that the engine had swiveled over to a stop and stuck. He called out for Cernan to thrust forward. Stafford then hit the switch to get rid of the descent stage and realized they were 30 degrees off from their previous attitude. The lunar module continued its crazy gyration across the lunar sky, and a warning light indicated that the inertial measuring unit really was about to reach its limits and go into gimbal lock. Stafford then took over in manual control, made a big pitch maneuver, and started working the attitude control switches. Snoopy finally calmed down.
Charlie Brown, Houston, they got staging. They had a wild gyration, though, but they got it under control. Over.
Roger.
Got a lot of time, 7 minutes. Well, I don't know what the hell that was, babe.
Snoop, Houston, you're looking okay for the insertion burn.
Just
a second,
I just...
And let me tell you what happened there real quick as we come around with this insertion burn. Now, with the attitude, that band started thrusting out, the thing just took off on us.
Roger, we copy.
And I can see we're coming up. And we come up to insertion, so I got a hold of it and tried to avoid gimbal lock, and guess I did. Looks like we got a good insertion out of it anyway. And a good staging out of it, and we're all set to go for insertion here.
You're listening to The Space Program.
Stafford and Cernan got a radar lock on the command module shortly after the insertion burn. At last, the relative speed between them was zero.
Hey, Joe, we're about ready to dock.
Stafford did find the ascent stage a little difficult to hold steady, just as suspected, but Young slid the probe smoothly into the dead center of the drogue.
Okay, John, you're into about 5 feet, babe. Looking beautiful.
Capture? Yes, thrusters are off.
We got a capture, John. Fire when you're ready.
Stafford ran the lunar module forward, and the capture latches closed with a loud bang.
Everything looks good in here, Tom.
It looks good.
I'll let it rock in the cabin, babe.
I can see you moving over.
We got him, John. We heard him in here.
Hello, Houston. Snoopy and Charlie Brown are hugging each other.
Yes, sir. Roger that. We heard him down here.
Okay, let's stay in our helmets, babe, until we get this thing squared away.
Okay, John, that was beautiful. Just beautiful, babe.
Stafford and Cernan had been gone for more than 8 hours, and they were ready to get back into the command module and rest. When all three were settled in, they cut the lander loose. Snoopy was soon out of sight.
Okay, Houston, we'll give you a countdown. We're all set to go for SIP, right?
That's affirmative, Charlie Brown. We're standing by for your count.
Okay. Give you a five count. Four,
3, 2, 1, fire. Cabin pressure's holding. Snoop went someplace.
Houston, Charlie Brown, over.
Roger, Charlie Brown, go.
Dan, when he leaves, he leaves.
Yeah, okay, don't back into that dude now, John, when you get turned around. Are you keeping it in sight?
Yeah, okay. Joe, he took off the path. He's gone. He went right into the sun.
Roger, copy.
We don't have any idea where he went. He just went boom and disappeared right into the sun.
All right, if you're giving us gimbal angles that allow us to burn out of here, we'll be okay.
Okay, stand by. Charlie Brown, this Snoopy. Or Charlie Brown, this Houston.
Yeah, I hope this is Houston. We're going to try to pick a Snoop up on our VHF ranging, but go ahead.
Okay, you didn't leave anybody in there, did you, Tom?
No. I don't think so.
Flight control then fired the ascent engine to fuel depletion, 249 seconds, and sent the lunar module into solar orbit. After 31 orbits, the crew fired the service module engine to begin the return to Earth.
Hello, Houston, Apollo 10.
Hello, Apollo 10, this is Houston. How'd the burn go?
Roger, Houston, we are returning to the Earth. Over.
Glad to have you on the way back home, 10.
Roger, the burn was absolutely beautiful, and Geo has a report, and we've got a fantastic view of the moon now. Over.
Mighty fine, Tom. Standing by for that report.
On May 26, 1969, Apollo 10 streaked through the early morning darkness like a shooting star to splash down in the Pacific.
Houston, we're going 6 miles short right now. What's going on? Going about 14. This machine is flying like crazy. Boy, it's really short.
Roger, 10, we copy, and we've got you on TV.
I say you, this thing is beautiful.
This trail's 2 miles overshoot, 1.7, 1.2 crossroads.
And we're pulling about 3.5 G's now. Rolling right 60 degrees, and we're practically on top of the target. EMS is reaching 21 miles to go. Went down, looks like I guess we're about 150 K right now.
Reported from photographic aircraft in the area that all three chutes are deployed, which is quite obvious from the vision coming from the prime recovery vessel. It's early twilight, early morning dawn at the ship. Still enough daylight to see the spacecraft. And we had splashed down at 192 hours, 3 minutes, 25 seconds approximately. Spacecraft is in stable one, that is apex up. About 4 miles estimated from the Princeton.
The journey had taken 192 hours, 3 minutes, 23 seconds. A helicopter picked the crew up and carried them to the USS Princeton within the hour. This fantastic voyage was over. The trail had been blazed.
I don't see any constraint from the knowledge we've gained on our mission to go land on 11. So I'd say we're going to go.
There we took this hardware that had been proven out in Earth orbit on Apollo 9, took it all the way to the moon, went into orbital operations around the moon, separated the LAM from the command module, and then made a low-level pass, low-level here being a 10-mile pass over the landing site. Here again, we proved techniques, timelines, the exact way to fit the pieces of the puzzle together, so that when we came upon our actual landing mission, the only part that was new was that from 10 miles down. I say only, knowing it was, of course, the greatest unknown we had. But the 9 and 10 crew, before the flight of Apollo 11, gave us the basic building blocks upon which to build the Apollo 11 mission.
The flight of Apollo 10. This is Nate Kinchy reporting.
From the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
This has been The Space Program, NASA's past, present, and future.